Blog Talk Radio.
Kyle and Corin yesterday, but I didn't hear until the last minute. Corin was apparently out of town again, and when I say out of town, I mean out of his town. He was away, so unfortunately we couldn't squeeze in a Kyle and Corin. Should be back in full effect next week. But today, boy oh boy, do I have a show for you. Got the big news of the day that I will lead with in just a second. Yeah, it's just very unfortunate. I don't want to spoil too much, even though I'm about to spoil it in about 3 minutes. We also have, later on in the show, Jeff Sessions is, really not playing around in terms of coming after marijuana users. In fact, he's going after a particular kind of marijuana user that will no doubt infuriate everybody. Everybody with a brain, that is. We also have a story about healthcare that'll make the rest of the modern world laugh at us. And we will check in on the resistance and see what they're up to, the resistance being the Democrats. So, a lot to get to. Let's kick back, relax, and get it started here today. We had a shooting yesterday involving congressmen, and actually it might be fair to call it a terror attack. So I'll leave that up to you guys to make the determination as to just how political this was in nature, but the very definition of a terror attack is violence done against civilians or, you know, innocent people for a political or religious motive. So this is from CNN here. Here's what they say. Representative Steve Scalise, a congressional staffer You're off air for one day and you lose it. Representative Steve Scalise, a congressional staffer, a lobbyist, and a member of the Capitol Police Force, were shot Wednesday in Alexandria, Virginia, during Republicans' early morning practice ahead of a charity baseball game. Federal law enforcement officials identified the alleged shooter as James Hodgkinson, 66 years old, of Belleville, Illinois, who died following a shootout with authorities. At least six people, including Scalise, the third-ranking member of House Republican leadership as the majority whip, were hospitalized. Scalise was in critical condition after suffering damage to internal organs, and his injuries will require additional operations, according to a MedStar Washington Hospital Center medical update late Wednesday. Congressman Steve Scalise sustained a single rifle shot to the left hip. The bullet traveled across his pelvis, fracturing bones, injuring internal organs, and causing severe bleeding, MedStar said in a statement put out by Scalise's office. He underwent immediate surgery and an additional procedure to stop bleeding. He has received multiple units of blood transfusion. His condition is critical, and he will require additional operations. We will provide periodic updates. Hodgkinson's Facebook page is largely political, and his profile picture is a caricature of Bernie Sanders as Uncle Sam. The Facebook feed is filled with anti-Trump sentiments such as, Trump is guilty and should go to prison for treason. He also liked a political cartoon that suggested that Scalise should be fired. On March 22nd, he posted, Trump is a traitor. Trump has destroyed our democracy. It's time to destroy Trump and co. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders said, both in a statement and on the Senate floor, that he had learned the shooter had volunteered on his Democratic presidential campaign, and he condemned the shooting in the strongest possible terms. So what we have here is a very, very rare instance of somebody who's a Bernie Sanders fan who believes in violence and did violence against congressmen. So, yeah, I mean, left-wing terrorist is what we have here. The guy has had a clear political agenda, and he attacked Republican lawmakers. And, man, was this news. When I heard about this, I almost couldn't believe it, because Bernie Sanders is a guy who advocates for peace endlessly. You know, David Sirota was tweeting about this yesterday. There were, like, a few days before this incident, Bernie Sanders was giving a speech on the importance of community. A guy who's advocated for nonviolence his entire career, whether it be nonviolent protest or whether it be being part of various anti-war movements. I mean, this is what Bernie Sanders does. This is who Bernie Sanders is. And you have a guy who was apparently a fan of Bernie who didn't get the message, didn't get, like, the whole philosophy of Bernie and what he's about. And, you know, Bernie, I'm not going to go through Bernie's entire statement here, but you guys can go check it out on your own if you want. But Bernie did this, you know, long response, basically, say, condemning this in the strongest possible terms, and we believe in nonviolence, and so on and so forth. And many of the takes on this have been insufferable, because New York Times had a piece about, you know, this really highlights a problem of hidden anger on the progressive left and how stuff like this can happen. It is literally just one dude. So let's be clear about that. But having said that, yes, it is true that the definition of a terror attack is doing violence against innocent people for a political or religious reason, and that very well may be exactly what was going on here. But we also should note there's a mix of factors that, you know, have gone into a guy like this doing what he did. I'm willing to bet a significant amount of money that mental illness does play a role, for sure. He used an assault weapon in this attack, which he purchased legally. So, again, David Sirota was tweeting about this yesterday, and he was making some fantastic points. He said, let's create a Hunger Games economy, arm everybody, and have a totally untreated mental health crisis in the United States, and see what happens. Well, this is kind of what happens. And there were some really, really cringy tweets that people were digging up. Like Rand Paul, for example, was one of the people who was at the practice, and people dug up tweets of him saying, or I should be clear, quoting Judge Napolitano when Napolitano was on Fox News, when Napolitano made the argument, why do you think we have the Second Amendment? We don't have it for deer hunting. We have it so that people can, you know, shoot at the government when the government gets too tyrannical. I'm not, that's what this guy's doing in his mind. I didn't say that he's right, because he's not. I don't believe in violence. You shouldn't do violence against congressmen or senators, against anybody. The only time I believe in violence is for self-defense. But, like, that's a point that's often made on the right. Hey, we need the Second Amendment to use our weapons against the government if they get too tyrannical. Government's pretty tyrannical. Do I need to go through the list of stuff? Waging offensive wars against countries that didn't attack us, NSA spying on absolutely everybody. You know, no more Fourth Amendment protection from unreasonable search and seizure. We have a government that holds people extrajudicially, no more due process, no more habeas corpus. So, pretty tyrannical, and this guy was shot against the government. But again, I'm not in favor of that. I'm not in favor of that. But maybe, you know, that rhetoric should be toned down a little bit in terms of, yeah, for shooting at the government. You're not going to have, you know, some random people with a Ruger 22 overtake a nuclear-armed state with the most powerful military the world has ever seen. So let's just, you know, back away from that whole argument. But by the way, the security detail for Scalise, the only reason there was security there is because Scalise is the third-ranking Republican. So he's in leadership. And people in leadership get security detail. Rand Paul said if it wasn't for Scalise being at the practice, it would have been a bloodbath. Everybody would have been massacred. And everybody would have been massacred because there would have been no security there for the other senators and congressmen. Only because Scalise was there, there were two security people who got in a firefight with him and ended up killing him. Joe Barton said, thankfully, this guy wasn't even a good shot. At least to this point, nobody's passed away. There was also another shooting yesterday, by the way. I think it was it at a UPS facility or something? But three people dead. So, and I don't know, is that categorized as a mass shooting? I don't know what the exact number is. Does that have to be three people or more, or four people or more? I don't know the exact numbers and qualifications, but more people died there. At least to this point, nobody's died yet here. Steve Scalise is in critical condition. You know, obviously everybody hopes he gets better. But, yeah, this isn't the way to solve problems, man. This isn't the way to solve problems. Bernie believes in nonviolence, advocates for nonviolence. He pushes for stuff like Medicare for all, and a living wage, and free college, and ending the wars. So to do violence on behalf of a political ideology which advocates nonviolence makes no sense. That's a contradiction, and you're an idiot if you do that. And this guy clearly was a little off his rocker, probably had mental health issues, and was armed to the teeth, and there was a problem. By the way, if we had for a guy like this, I wouldn't be surprised. Now, we don't know all the facts yet, but for a guy like this, I would be surprised if when we learn more facts, that he's not like paranoid schizophrenic or has severe bipolar disorder or something. And if we had a universal background check, maybe we would have been able to prevent this guy from getting a weapon. Because, it, you know, all the evidence thus far indicates that the guy's kind of crazy. So, heartbreaking situation. And believe it or not, here's the craziest part of this story. Believe it or not, there are more people on the right saying, look, it's just one guy. Bernie is a nice guy. He doesn't advocate violence. His followers aren't going around killing Republicans. This isn't like an epidemic or something. There's more people on the right saying that than there are corporate Democrats saying that. There's a decent number of corporate Democrats who are like, see, there we go. Told you, Bernie Sanders. It's violent ideology, and it's far left. I mean, they're the problem, and this is what happens when you go in the direction of somebody who believes in social democracy. The fuck are you talking about? So this is a story that rattled me. It rattled the entire United States. And here's the final fact I'll bring up real quick. There were, I believe the number was 17 congressmen and senators who've been shot at since the beginning of the U.S. So this is kind of like a recurring thing that we've seen, and nobody should go that road, and we should all try to wage the political revolution in a peaceful way, a nonviolent way. We wage the revolution when we vote. And we get a wave of Justice Democrats in there, true liberals and progressives, to fight for the right things. That this guy decided to take a weapon and go after Republicans. Doesn't matter how odious somebody's ideology is, you don't resort to political violence. The only time you could ever use violence, and it's okay, is in self-defense. And that clearly wasn't the case here. There's no doubt about that. So, the shooter passed away. I don't know if I mentioned that, but he died from, I think it was in the article, but he died from his injuries. I wish Steve Scalise and everybody who was affected by this a speedy recovery. And those, the security detail that was there, I mean, they really are some heroes, and they ended up saved a lot of people just by virtue of the fact that they were there and they were able to do their job relatively effectively. Okay. Now, let's continue. The Senate held a vote on a resolution of disapproval over Trump's arms deal with Saudi Arabia. The resolution failed, but it was 47-53. There was a recent amendment about arming Saudi Arabia not that long ago, and I think it passed with 71 votes. So there was a little bit of inching in the direction of, not too sure this is a good idea. I think it was because of the size of the bill. Like, Chuck Schumer, I think, was for arming Saudi Arabia the last time they had a vote on it. Now he's like, no. I think it might be the size of it, or it just might be opportunistic corporate Democrats who are trying to look more progressive than they are. Now, even if it passed, this was largely symbolic because Trump could just veto it anyway and do the arms deal. But media outlets are using this to say, there's a trend here. There's a trend. We're moving in the direction of an anti-Saudi Arabia element in the country, not just among the population, but among elected officials. It's true that we're inching in that direction, but look, man, main reason I'm giving you this information, other than to just give you the facts as to what's happening, is I'm not, like, excited about this. That should have been defeated 100. The Saudi weapons deal should have been defeated 100-0. Everybody should have voted for this resolution of disapproval. Like, think about the kid gloves we're using with politicians to say, more people voted against Saudi than usually do, even though it still wasn't a majority. All the facts about what Saudi Arabia does. They're the number one state sponsor of terror. That's what they are. They have a draconian, primitive government, an absolute monarchy and theocracy and dictatorship. You know the situation for women over there. You know the situation for gays. You know how they behead people like the year is 17. You know how they believe in crimes like witchcraft and sorcery. And they say all atheists are terrorists. If you're an atheist, you're just a terrorist. I'm a terrorist in the eyes of Saudi Arabia. And we can't even get a majority of senators to say, hey, let's not arm them. And look at what they're doing in Yemen right now. They're blockading the country. 14 million people are starving. They're bombing them nonstop, relentlessly. Women and children dying. 10,000 people dead in the bombing campaign using illegal weapons. Look at what they're doing in Syria, funneling arms to jihadists. So if you can't get a unanimous vote to say we shouldn't arm those people, then money controls our politics to the point where it's comical. Like, it's a tragedy, but it's comical. It's comedy also. And also, I think a lot of the senators, they're just coasting off the momentum of what senators before them have done for so long and what everybody around them does. And to them, it's not even, they don't reflect on it for a second. There's no, like, moral considerations. They just go, wait, Saudi's our ally. We back Saudi. So, yes, we do that. Yes, yes, yes. Vote to give them $100 billion or more, $110 billion, in weapons. I mean, that's crazy. How do you not stop and do any moral consideration, any reflection? It's so clear that they're not making policy based off of what is the proper policy, what is the correct policy, what's the right thing to do for the people of the United States and the people in the world. They don't do that. Just like, I don't know, everybody votes with Saudi. I guess I'm going to vote with Saudi, and I don't know. There's a lot of lobbyists here on Capitol Hill that just throw money at us to vote in the direction of Saudi Arabia and to vote, more importantly, to get more money to the defense contractors. That there's whatever, here, yeah, sure, arm Saudi. So I don't like the low bar. Some media outlets like, we're getting there, almost a majority disapproving of Saudi. No, it should be fucking 100-0. People should say, yes, we disapprove of this deal, especially even when it's just fucking symbolic. You can't even bring yourself to symbolically say, shouldn't do that, even if you're secretly for it because you want to give more money to the defense contractors. God, we're so lost. The government is so lost. And it's tragic to watch this because everybody, like, if you follow the news even a little bit, if all you do is watch this show, then you get a pretty solid selection of stories and you know a lot of important stuff that's going on. Like, you know what the right thing to do is and what the right way to vote is on this. But a majority just go, no, no, I'm going to vote for it, no. How can you defend that vote? If there are town hall meetings and somebody presses them just a little bit on this, they're going to crumble like a fucking house of cards. That's it. All you have to do is go, hey, Saudi Arabia doesn't let women drive and they behead people in the public square for sorcery. Why did you vote to give them billions of dollars of weapons? Because then what are they going to say? The senators are going to be like, they have nothing. They have nothing. But yeah, let's have the low bar and say, yay, almost the majority of you are against an official terror state with the ideology of ISIS. Yay, all of you can't be against the state that has the ideology of ISIS. That's such a low bar. The people are cheering when it's not even a majority. It's the saddest thing ever. Okay, I think you get the point. Okay. All right, next. Let's talk about Trump care, bitch. Take a look at this. Here's an update on Trump care. Trump calls House health bill that he celebrated in the Rose Garden mean. What? Dude, you were just doing the thing where you're tremendous. This bill is tremendous. Believe me. Let me just tell you. This is a bill. It's so much better than Obamacare. Obamacare is the past. Failing Obamacare is crumbling in front of our eyes. We need Trump care. This bill's amazing. Let me just tell you. Believe me. He was just doing the thing. We had a fucking photo op, and all the Republicans said, laughing, and there was, oh, yes, take health care away from poor people and call it reform. Oh, yes. But behind closed doors, in private meetings, he's going, it bill's mean as a motherfucker. So what do they go on to point out? What's he referring to? He's referring to the fact that the original bill, which was also, by the way, very mean, the original bill still had the protections for people with pre-existing conditions. The essential benefits portion of Obamacare was still intact. So a health insurance company can't just reject you because you have a pre-existing condition, because that's crazy. Then we set up a system where the people who need care the most don't get it. The company just goes, yeah, we don't want to cover you because you're sick. Yeah, but that's why they need fucking coverage. They're sick. Yeah, but that, we're not going to make money, so no. So Trump and so-called moderate Republicans were like, oh, come on, we got to keep in the essential health benefits. And in reality, what that is Republicans and, you know, senators and congressmen who are from more blue states, they can't vote to axe the protections for pre-existing conditions because then they're just voting away their political future. Everybody's going to vote you out if you do that. So they were like, yeah, let's ruin everything else, but we can't go that far and get rid of the protections for pre-existing conditions. But the so-called Freedom Caucus, hilariously named, by the way, there's never been a more inappropriate name than the Freedom Caucus for the far-right Tea Partiers. They went, no, we need to get rid of all of it, all of Obamacare. So even the protections for people with pre-existing conditions, we're going to get rid of that and pretend like we're the good guys. What? So even the other Republicans were like, oh, no, son. That's a little wild. Not sure I'm in favor of it. But they ironed out a deal where they indeed do get rid of it. And what they did is they said, oh, come on. We got to be reasonable here. What we'll do is we'll allow states to opt out of the protections for people with pre-existing conditions. So under that scenario, what would happen is all the red states would say, no protections for people with pre-existing conditions. Aren't we so great? Isn't this a great idea? Aren't we helping the people? And the blue states would remain with the protections. So that was their compromise. That passed the House. Now it's going to the Senate, and the senators are like, if we pass this, there might be 100 Democrats in the Senate next election. So, and Trump, even Trump realizes this, like, oh, yeah, that's mean. I mean, our bill before was bad, but this is, like, bad and just mean. Really? You're going to take away people's protections for pre-existing conditions? So, look, it shows you, man, it's all a fucking game. And you know what? I'm actually impressed by Trump on this one. Not necessarily because he's calling it mean when it is mean, but because he knows any of the provisions in the bill. Because we've covered stories before that every time he was interviewed on his own bill and he was asked, like, details, he would, you know what he would do? He would just pivot and start talking about the process of getting the bill passed. He's like, yeah, it was tremendous. What we did is we met with a lot of the people, Freedom Caucus people, tremendous people, good people, some of the best people. And what we would do is we would figure out how we're going to move forward and how we're going to make a deal. We're going to make a tremendous deal. We made a tremendous deal, let me just tell you. Believe me. And the people who were interviewing him would be like, Mr. Trump, I asked you about the provisions of the bill. He's like, yes, we made a tremendous deal. So he would always dodge. So, you know, my reading of that was, along with many other people, he doesn't know any provisions of his own bill. He has no clue how his bill works. None whatsoever. Well, he apparently knows enough to say, oh, the House bill takes away protections for pre-existing conditions, and that's mean. So credit to Trump for knowing, like, maybe 1% of what's in his own health care bill, which, by the way, has an approval rating of 17%. They passed a bill in the House that has a bill that has an approval rating of 17%. It would leave a total of 53 million people uninsured. It cuts Medicaid by $880 billion. It's a tax cut to the rich of each person in the top 0.1% gets an extra $200,000 in their bank account every year. So the bill is a disaster, and even Trump understands that the House version of the bill is, quote, mean. So we'll see what they do for the Senate version, but I wouldn't expect much better than just them putting back in the protection for pre-existing conditions and maybe a few other things. But there's no way that whatever they iron out is going to be preferable to Obamacare, because I got news for everybody. Obamacare is the original right-wing healthcare reform. That's the Heritage Foundation plan, Bob Dole's plan, Richard Nixon's plan, Mitt Romney's plan. So the Democrats did the Republican plan. So now the Republicans have nowhere to go but further right. And what's further right? No fucking plan at all. No reform at all. It's an amalgamation of talk radio talking points. So I don't know, allow people to buy insurance across state lines and like gut Medicaid more and then everything will work out or something. So they have no more ideas left because the Democrats did the old Republican ideas. So Republicans move right off a fucking cliff. And now some of them are even starting to realize, oh, we have, like, no idea what we're doing, and our bill is fucking mean. So, both hilarious and tragic. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, The Guardian did some investigative reporting on the Trump empire. I'm going to tell you what they found. And Bernie Sanders wrote an article in the New York Times about how Democrats can start winning elections again. So, yeah. All right, stay right there, guys. We will be right back.
Real, it's your fucking problem. Bring your girl to the crib. crib, maybe we can sell. I know you love it when it's beat his own. Make you think about all of the niggas you've been leading on. Make me think about all of the rappers I've been feeding on. Got a feeling that's the same dudes that we speaking on. Oh, word, ain't heard my album, who you sleeping on? You should print the lyrics out and have a fucking read along. Ain't a fucking sing along unless you roll the weed alone. And just drop down and get your eagle on. Or we can stay up at the stars and put the Beatles on. All the shit you talking about is not up for discussion. I will pay to make it bigger. I don't pay for no reduction. If it's coming from a nigga, I don't know then I don't trust it. If you coming from my head, then motherfucker get the bussing. Yes, Lord, I don't really say this often, but this long dick nigga ain't for the long talking, not beat.
Lord, bad bitches, that's my fucking problem. And yeah, I like the fuck, I got a fucking problem. Lord, bad bitches, that's my fucking problem. And yeah, I like the fuck, I got a fucking problem. I love bad bitches, that's my fucking problem. And yeah, I like the fuck, I got a fucking problem.
Finding somebody real is your fucking problem. Bring your girl to the crib, maybe we can solve. Yeah, ho, this is Finelli. My pep talk turned into a pep rally. Say she from the hood, but she live in South of Valley. Now vacated in Atlanta, then she going back to Cali. Got your girl on my line, world on my line. The irony, I fuck them at the same one time. She eyeing me like a nigga don't exist. Girl, I know you want this dirt. Girl, I'm Kendrick Lamar, a.k.a. Benz is to me just they car. That mean your friends is need be up too far. See my standards, I'll pamper by three thumbs tomorrow. Kill them all, dead bodies in the hallway. Don't get involved, listen what the crystal ball say. Holly, Barry, holly, do ya? Holla back, I'll do ya.
I love bad bitches, that's my fucking problem. And yeah, I like the fuck, I got a fucking problem. I love bad bitches, that's my fucking problem. And yeah, I like the fuck, I got a fucking problem. I love bad bitches, that's my fucking problem. And yeah, I like the fuck, I got a fucking problem.
Finding somebody real is your fucking problem. Bring your girl to the crib, maybe we can solve out.
About the Trump business empire and what was uncovered recently. The Guardian did some investigative reporting on the Trump empire, and look at what they found. Revealed reality of life working in an Ivanka Trump clothing factory. Workers complain of verbal abuse, impossible targets, and poverty pay so bad, they have to live away from their children. Damn. The reality of working in a factory making clothes for Ivanka Trump's label has been laid bare, with employees speaking of being paid so little they cannot live with their children, anti-union intimidation, and women being offered a bonus if they don't take time off while menstruating. The Guardian has spoken to more than a dozen workers at the fashion labels factory in Subang, Indonesia, where employees describe being paid one of the lowest minimum wages in Asia, and there are claims of impossibly high production targets and sporadically compensated overtime. The workers' complaints come only a week after labor activists investigating possible abuses at a Chinese factory that makes Ivanka Trump's shoes disappeared into police custody. The activist group claimed they had uncovered a host of violations at the plant, including salaries below China's legal minimum wage, managers verbally abusing workers, and violations of women's rights. In the Indonesian factory, some of the complaints are similar, although the wages paid to employees in Subang are much lower. So, that's wild, by the way. You have government, you have officials who are investigating Ivanka's factories in China, and they disappear. Nobody knows where they are. Wow. Could it be that the Chinese government doesn't want that stuff, the labor violations, uncovered, because then it gets back to Trump, and Trump gets pissed off, and he takes some sort of policy reaction against China? I wonder. And look, here's the main point of this story. Trump is a guy who has repeatedly said, he did it on the campaign trail all the time, first of all, TPP, we're not going to do TPP. We're outsourcing good American jobs. We've got to keep the jobs here. We're going to renegotiate NAFTA. We're going to renegotiate NAFTA. China, currency manipulator, bad, sad. We're going to make sure we redo our trade deals. We're going to benefit the American worker. The forgotten man will never be forgotten again. This is stuff he said. Not only is he not fixing it, even in his inner circle, he hasn't fixed it. So, hey, Don, you don't want U.S. jobs to be outsourced anymore? Here's where you start. Stop letting your family outsource them, and you stop outsourcing them. Trump does business in at least 12 different countries. He's outsourced his own jobs. So we're supposed to believe you that you're against outsourcing. When you personally outsource, Ivanka outsources, your family outsources, and you're not even outsourcing and then paying the people a decent livable wage. You're paying them so poorly that some of them can't even afford to live with their kids, and there's labor violations out the wazoo. So he claims he's going to fix these problems for the entire country and for all the corporations that outsource their jobs. He hasn't even fixed it for himself and his family. So he is bullshitting you. He is lying. All he does is talk a good game. He's a well-known, well-trained, practiced con artist. So he knows how to say the right things to get people to go, oh, yeah, Dad, Trump going to look out for me. And then he doesn't do anything to change it. You would think, if you really care that much about jobs in the U.S. and not outsourcing jobs, wouldn't you tell Ivanka, like, hey, sweetheart, why are you outsourcing jobs to Indonesia? Why don't you have your goods made in the U.S.? Well, Kyle, it costs a lot more. Yeah, it would cost a lot more for all the manufacturing jobs to come back to the U.S., but that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. We should do it. Have good-paying jobs in the U.S., and yes, the price for a fucking Ivanka shirt might go up a little bit, but who gives a fuck? At least you're paying people a good wage. No, they do the same thing. They're doing the same thing that Trump rails against all the fucking time. And this should clearly stop immediately. I would argue not only should you not have oppressive jobs anymore that pay people less than a livable wage, bring those jobs back to the U.S. Bring them back to the U.S. We covered the story where they went into a Trump hotel, looked at everything in the hotel, all the furniture, all the goods, everything. And the majority of the things in the hotel weren't made in the U.S., even though, again, he loves to rant and rave about how we got to bring jobs back here and keep jobs here. And so, okay, you stop outsourcing your jobs. You stop buying goods that are made overseas. You tell your daughter to stop using fucking labor in Indonesia where they get paid less than a living wage. It's just so gross that he just gets away with all this stuff as his rhetoric is the opposite. We got to hold him accountable. And you have to know that's the thing about Trump. You just can't trust a word he says, because he speaks out of both sides of his mouth, so he'll be on both sides of any given issue. But even when he says the right things, his actions prove the opposite, and this is another example of it right here. Okay. We are going to go to Bernie Sanders in just a second. Okay, here we go. Bernie Sanders wrote an article in the New York Times about how the Democrats can start winning elections again. Let's see what he had to say. In 2016, the Democratic Party lost the presidency to possibly the least popular candidate in American history. In recent years, Democrats have also lost the Senate and the House to right-wing Republicans whose extremist agenda is far removed from where most Americans are politically. Republicans now control almost two-thirds of governor's offices and have gained about 1,000 seats in state legislatures in the past 9 years. In 24 states, Democrats have almost no political influence at all. If these results are not a clear manifestation of a failed political strategy, I don't know what is. For the sake of our country and the world, the Democratic Party, in a very fundamental way, must change direction. It has got to open its doors wide to working people and young people. It must become less dependent on wealthy contributors, and it must make clear to the working families of this country that, in these difficult times, it is prepared to stand up and fight for their rights. Without hesitation, it must take on the powerful corporate interests that dominate the economic and political life of the country. There are lessons to be learned from the recent campaign in Britain. The conservatives there called the snap election with the full expectation that they would win in a landslide. They didn't. Against all predictions, they lost 13 seats in Parliament, while Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party won 32. There is never one reason elections are won or lost, but there is widespread agreement that momentum shifted to Labour after it released a very progressive manifesto that generated much enthusiasm among young people and workers. One of the most interesting aspects of the election was the soaring turnout among voters 34 or younger. While Republicans should appeal to moderate, while Democrats should appeal to moderate Republicans who are disgusted with the Trump presidency, too many in our party cling to an overly cautious centrist ideology. The party's main thrust must be to make politics relevant to those who have given up on democracy and bring millions of new voters into the political process. It must be prepared to take on the right-wing extremist ideology of the Koch brothers and the billionaire class and fight for an economy and a government that work for all, not just the 1%. Donald Trump wants to throw 23 million Americans off of health insurance. Democrats must guarantee health care to all as a right through a Medicare for All single-payer program. Mr. Trump wants to give enormous tax breaks to billionaires. Democrats must support a progressive tax system that demands that the very wealthy, Wall Street, and large corporations begin paying their fair share of taxes. Mr. Trump wants to sell our infrastructure to Wall Street and foreign countries. Democrats must fight for a trillion-dollar public investment that creates over 13 million good-paying jobs. Mr. Trump has withdrawn the U.S. from the Paris Agreement on climate change. Democrats must take on the fossil fuel industry and accelerate our efforts to combat climate change by encouraging energy efficiency and the use of sustainable energy. Mr. Trump has proposed deep cuts to higher education. Democrats must make public colleges and universities tuition-free and substantially lower student debt. Mr. Trump has doubled down on our failed approach to crime that has resulted in the United States having more people in jail than any other country. Democrats must reform a broken criminal justice system and invest in jobs and education for our young people, not more jails and incarceration. Mr. Trump has scapegoated and threatened the 11 million undocumented people in our country. Democrats must fight for comprehensive immigration reform and a path towards citizenship. This is a pivotal moment in American history. If the Democrats are prepared to rally grassroots America in every state and to stand up to the greed of the billionaire class, the party will stop losing elections and it will create the kind of country the American people want and deserve. So, I know that as I go through all that, people in my audience file it under the duh category. Like, it's just so obvious at this point that he's right, and that's the direction you have to go in. But you would be astonished at the number of people in establishment media or the people who've just chugged the Kool-Aid on this that think Bernie's 100% wrong. He's 100% wrong. I just read an article this morning in Vice, of all places, where they say, oh, Bernie's wrong because, you know, in order to defeat Trump and the Republicans, you got to unify. There's got to be unity, so you got to stop attacking other Democrats. Notice something. That argument is never made against corporate Democrats who attack the shit out of the left. That's never made. It's never made against Hillary supporters who bash endlessly Bernie supporters. Never made. They always say, unify, unify. But they scream it at Bernie supporters. They never scream it at Hillary supporters. So what's the implication? The implication is the progressives have to fall in line behind the corporate Democrats. Never the opposite. Never, hey, corporate Democrats, unify, 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 and unify behind the progressives and the liberals. So think about that. These are all subtle things here that it's people don't pick up on immediately, but it's there when you look for it that it's the burden is always on you, the Bernie supporter, to fall in line, suck it up, you know, just accept your half measure and that's it. Accept the corporate Democrats because that's the best you're going to get. When in reality, again, all the evidence suggests the opposite is the way to go, that the corporate Democrats and the Hillary supporters, they're the ones who need to fall in line behind a progressive agenda. They're the ones who need to say, okay, you know what? Maybe going for Medicare for All is the right path. Maybe going for free college is the right path. Maybe fighting for a living wage is the right path. Ending the wars, ending the drug war, re-regulating Wall Street, a new deal, multi-trillion dollar investment in jobs for the future and roads and bridges and waterways and all that stuff, airports, upgrading all of it. So Bernie's 100% right. And notice, what did he use as his example here, as his model? Jeremy Corbyn. Now, surprisingly to me, I got a lot of shit when I said the Bernie Sanders of the UK leads the Labour Party to big gains. But I said it because it's fucking true. It's not just me saying it. They have compared themselves to the other one. People acted like, oh, Kyle, why would you fucking compare the two? It's not even fucking fair. How dare you compare Bernie to Jeremy? How dare Bernie compare Bernie to Jeremy? How dare Jeremy compare Bernie to Jeremy? Because that's what they're doing. Now, understand, in some ways, yes, Corbyn is to the left of Bernie. And usually on those disagreements, I'm more with Bernie than I am with Jeremy Corbyn. Jeremy Corbyn is admittedly to the left of me on certain things. But, guys, read the fucking Labour platform. Like, there was a lot of fucking butthurt idiots in the comment section the last when I did the segment on the Labour Party making big gains in the UK. But a lot of people have seemingly fallen for propaganda about Jeremy Corbyn. I love how the most hilarious one is they say, terrorist sympathizer, that's what he is. Theresa May did a billion-dollar weapons deal with Saudi Arabia. Literally terrorist sympathies. Arming terrorists, you fucking idiots. Whereas Jeremy Corbyn, they go, oh, he made some comments sometimes about, like, Hamas and Hezbollah and our friends and the fucking and Hamas and Hezbollah. Yeah, that's part of fucking, you know, negotiation tactics. You go, our friends in Saudi Arabia, our friends in Iran. It's not like I agree with everything they stand for. You know what is a better indication that you agree with everything somebody stands for? If you arm them, if you give them multi-billion dollar arms deal. So hilarious for people who support Theresa May to say Jeremy Corbyn is a terrorist sympathizer, please. So, but the most important part is forget whatever, oh, I don't like this thing he said about this thing, and I'm an idiot who gets caught up on things people say and not their policies. Focus on policy. Read the fucking Labour Manifesto. Again, some things in it I disagree with and they're to the left of me. But the overwhelming majority of the Labour Manifesto is awesome. It is awesome. It is brilliant. The things they want to do are things that would help regular people. So I wonder why they won. Because most people 34 years old or younger, you know how they decide who to vote for? They fucking go read what policies the different people stand for. They don't listen to fuck some bobblehead on some shitty corporate media channel. Let me tell you what I think about Jeremy Corbyn and what he said when you go back to July of 2011. Blah, 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 blah. You're like, I don't give a fuck. What the fuck is this? Why are you commenting on this shit like it's Dancing with the Stars? Tell me what the fuck they stand for. What are their policies? And it was a bold left-wing vision. It was an intelligent vision. And so there was an outpouring of support among younger people, led Labour to pick up about 30 seats, led the conservatives to lose 13. And Bernie's like, that's what you got to do what that guy did. And notice something. What's the consistent pattern between Bernie and Corbyn? Bernie gets shit on endlessly by the establishment press. Endlessly. They think this guy's the fucking devil. They don't take him seriously. Far left, naive, crazy. They said the same shit about Corbyn. Not a single person in the establishment media was like, I think Labour is going to do swimmingly. Everybody said, oh, they're going to get wiped out. Oh, my God, it's going to be a permanent conservative majority. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be the worst Labour showing that they've ever had ever. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And it was one of the best showings. So it's same thing with Bernie. Oh, but, yeah, you can't go in that direction. Pie in the sky, fairy dust, unicorn farts, far left, fucking crazy Bernie, crazy socialist. You obviously have to be more like Joe Manchin in order to win elections. Or Hillary Clinton, that's another one they'll say. All the evidence is the opposite. Most liked politician in the United States of America. It goes even deeper than that, though. Most liked in terms of policy positions. Virtually every policy Bernie Sanders is for has a majority. A majority of Americans. So many of his policies, even a majority of Republicans support. The article that I was talking about in Vice that was shitting on Bernie's article, they were like, the only way you're going to win in these red states is if you run people like Joe Manchin. That's what you got to understand. Yeah. They've never been given the option of the populist left, you moron. And when they are given that option, look at what happened. Bernie did a town hall in West Virginia in deep red Trump country. They gave him a standing ovation. They cheered for Medicare for All and free college and a living wage. They cheered for it. You had Trump voters standing up and thanking Bernie, going, thank you for fighting for me more than even other senators from coal country. You're from the Northeast. You have no responsibility to coal country. Mitch McConnell does, but you vote with us a lot more than he does, so thank you, Bernie. Are you kidding me? Among people who describe themselves as very conservative in the primary, Bernie won! Even though Hillary is literally more conservative, Bernie won among people who describe themselves as more conservative. Why? Because this isn't about partisanship. It's about policy substance and ideas that are good for everybody, which is why Jeremy Corbyn and Labour did well, and why if the Democrats go the Bernie Sanders route, the Justice Democrats route, there will be tremendous gains, but only if they go in that direction. If not, get ready for permanent losses. Okay. All right, let's go to Jeff Sessions and marijuana. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is trying to crack down on medical marijuana users now. I was one of the people who warned you from the beginning about Jeff Sessions. I mean, the guy has an endless list of quotes about what he thinks of all drugs. He said, good people don't smoke marijuana. That's a direct quote from Jeff Sessions. Good people don't smoke marijuana. Think about how wrong he is and how far gone you have to be on this issue in order to say something like that. Good people don't smoke marijuana. I think the majority of Americans have tried marijuana at least once. So I guess they're all bad people, according to Jeff Sessions. But he would say yes. He'd go, yeah, no, that's your good people don't do that. Okay, Jeff. So this is from Newsweek. Jeff Sessions targeting medical marijuana users cites historic drug epidemic. Medical marijuana users, and he's targeting, yeah, there's an epidemic. First of all, how are you going to have a conversation about an epidemic while talking about marijuana? It's not even physically addictive. Epidemic of people eating Cheetos and cookie dough ice cream. Epidemic of people giggling while they watch Seth Rogen movies. Epidemic, horrible. Epidemic of people enjoying their weekends and their nights. Epidemic. Here's what they say. Attorney General Jeff Sessions recently submitted a letter asking certain members of Congress to remove federal protections that prevent the Department of Justice from cracking down on medical marijuana patients, cultivators, and dispensaries that are in line with state laws. Under the Rohrabacher-Farr Amendment, which passed in 2014 and was recently renewed by Congress, the DOJ is prohibited from spending federal money to interfere with state-level medical marijuana laws. Sessions sent the letter in May, and it was later obtained and released on Monday by marijuana news site MassRoots.com. In it, the Attorney General said that the amendment inhibits the department's ability to properly enforce the Controlled Substances Act, under which marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. Okay, so let me explain what this means here, because I learned something in this story that I didn't know, that apparently there was an amendment that passed in 2014, which said that the federal government, the Department of Justice, cannot go after people who sell medical marijuana if the person selling medical marijuana is in compliance with state laws. I didn't know that, because the way it works in the U.S. is federal law overrides state law. That's the supremacy clause of the Constitution. So under federal law, you have it's a Schedule I drug. Marijuana is a Schedule I drug. So if it's a Schedule I drug, then that would mean that the state laws are overridden. But I guess what they're saying here is the federal law was tweaked to say even though it's a Schedule I drug, you can't go after people in the states who sell it if they're abiding by the state laws selling medical marijuana. They can still go after ones who sell recreational marijuana, even if that is legal in given states. So it's a little weird, and there's, like, I don't know, some contradictory laws, I guess you could say, on the issue of marijuana, which, by the way, is why we need to have it totally legal for recreational purposes on a federal level. I mean, that's the answer. But, yeah, issues like this, I get a feeling that Sessions might go ahead and crack down on medical marijuana businesses either way, and then it'll go all the way through the court system and get all the way to the Supreme Court. Because there is a little bit of a discrepancy here. There's a little bit of a contradiction where it's a Schedule I drug, so we can go after anybody using it for whatever reason, but no, there was an amendment that said you can't go after people who use medical marijuana if they're in compliance with state laws. So I don't know. This might be something for the courts to resolve, because there appears to be a little bit of an issue and it's up in the air there. But what Jeff Sessions did is he's interpreting it as, okay, I can't go after medical marijuana people, but let me beg Congress to tweak that amendment to allow me to go after people using medical marijuana, people who sell it and people who use it. Man, look at this guy's priorities. That's amazing. I mean, we incarcerate more people in the U.S. than in any other country. We're number one in incarceration. And a lot of that is because of the fucking drug war. And he's like, yeah, let's keep locking up nonviolent drug offenders. Let's lock up medical marijuana patients. God forbid the day that Jeff Sessions learns that Vicodin and Percocet, these are, you know, opioids, which is, it reacts in the body the same way as heroin does. If he learns that morphine is basically heroin, that when you get in a car accident, they give you morphine and stuff, when you get in the hospital and you're in pain, they give you morphine. When he learns that that's what that is, oh my God, he might try to come after that. Go after anybody who, you know, is using pain pills. Because it's a drug, and I'm Jeff Sessions, and drugs are bad. You're a bad person if you use that. God, he's so stupid. Like, the way he thinks is just so stupid. He's one of those guys who was told from a kid, drugs are bad. He just believes 100%, never experimented, never learned, never thought, well, hold on now, wait a second. Caffeine's a drug. I drink that. It gets me all uppity. You know, alcohol's a drug. People get drunk. Most people who drink alcohol don't become alcoholics. They're just regular people. And they come home from work and they have a cocktail or something. He never connected the dots. Like, oh, maybe we shouldn't lock people in a cage and take away their freedom because they decided to tweak their consciousness with marijuana. And, by the way, hilarious, because Jeff Sessions and people like him, these Republican senators, they love, 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 love to be the first one to say, Constitution, freedom, I believe in liberty and freedom. Now let me lock nonviolent drug offenders and medical marijuana users in a cage and take away their freedom. Well, then you don't believe in freedom. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, I believe in freedom, but you lock up people who aren't hurting anybody and who are just tweaking their consciousness, sometimes for medical reasons. So So he's not only dumb enough to go after recreational marijuana, Jeff Sessions wanted to go after medical marijuana people. Medical! Unbelievable stupidity. And yes, this is our Attorney General. Our Attorney General is stuck in the year fucking 1917. Okay. Let me take our final break. When we come back, I still got a lot of stuff for you, including a story that'll make the rest of the modern world laugh at us. And we'll check in on the resistance and see what they're up to. I'll give you a hint. Kofifi, however the fuck you say it. There's your hint. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Why can't Son of a bitch. All right, we're back. We are back. We are back. Quick program note. There is no live show tomorrow. There is no live show tomorrow. YouTube channel will still be active, of course, but no live show tomorrow. We'll be back in full effect on Monday. Hopefully Corin's no longer away for Kyle and Corin for next week. Sucks that there was no Kyle and Corin this week. I was looking forward to it, but last minute I learned he was away again. So, yeah, a lot to talk about on Kyle and Corin. But no live show tomorrow. All right, let's jump into a story we have from Bloomberg that's wild. We have a story here from Bloomberg that will make the rest of the industrialized world laugh at us, but also feel sorry for us at the same time. Listen to this. Crowdfunding platforms such as GoFundMe and YouCaring have turned sympathy for Americans drowning in medical expenses into a cottage industry. Now Republican efforts in Congress to repeal and replace Obamacare could swell the ranks of the uninsured and spur the business of helping people raise donations online to pay for health care. But medical crowdfunding doesn't have to wait for Congress to act. Business is already booming, and its leaders expect the rapid growth to continue no matter what happens on the Hill. Quote, whether it's Obamacare or Trumpcare, the weight of health care costs on consumers will only increase, said Dan Saper, chief executive officer of YouCaring. It will drive more people to try and figure out how to pay health care needs, and crowdfunding is, in its early days, as a way to help those people. Growth has been rapid. In a September 2015 LinkedIn post, Solomon wrote that the 1 million campaigns set up over the previous year had raised $1 billion from nearly 12 million donors. By February 2016, the total was $2 billion. In October 2016, it was $3 billion from 25 million donors. A NerdWallet study of medical crowdfunding said GoFundMe had indicated that $930 million of the $2 billion raised in the period the study analyzed was from medical campaigns. So nearly half of the money raised on crowdfunding sites is going to medical bills. That's so sad. By the way, only one of 10 crowdfunding drives hits their goal, or only one of 10 in the medical category specifically. Wow. This is our healthcare system. This is our healthcare system right here. Think about how other industrialized nations look at this. What do they see when they look at this? This is the fucking Hunger Games. They look at this and they're laughing. They also feel really sorry for us, but they're fucking laughing. A lot of people might not get how it works in other industrialized nations, but you get sick, you get help, and you pay nothing. Want me to say that again? I know, it's a little bit of a shock to the system. You get sick, you get help, and you don't pay for anything. People have often made the joke about, like, Breaking Bad. Like, oh, the guy needs to fucking sell crystal meth to pay his medical bills. Like, that's what the show is based on. In any other industrialized nation, the show would be over. It would be over before it starts. He gets diagnosed, he's like, oh, okay. When do I start treatment? You start on Wednesday. Like, that's the whole show. He doesn't need to fucking go sell crystal meth in order to make the money to try to pay the bills and leave the kids with some money. What are we doing, man? What are we doing? This is not like priority number one of the Democrats. Priority number one of the Democrats should be Medicare for all. Medicare for all. Let's fight, 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 let's go. Right now. What are we doing? What are we doing? Priority number one it should be. Some of them aren't even for it. Nancy Pelosi, leader of the Democrats, not even for Medicare for All. Not even for it. Half the money raised on crowdfunding goes to medical bills. Medical bills is one of the top causes of bankruptcy in the U.S. Trump even told the story. He's like, yeah, I have a friend. He was in Scotland. He hurt himself. He went to the hospital. They fixed him up, and he left. He didn't have to pay anything. Trump was praising this. This was before he was president, but he's like, yeah, amazing system. We need to have a system like that. That was in Scotland. But same thing, Canada, Norway, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, Finland, Britain, Australia. That's all that. That's what it is. So their tax dollars, like our tax dollars, you know how 50% of our discretionary budget goes towards the military? You know how we have 800 military bases around the world that costs $100 billion a year to maintain? They take all that tax money that they're paying in and they actually put it towards healthcare and stuff, like things that make sense for the people. A lot of places have free college. Slovenia has free college. You pay your taxes, it's going for people to go to college. I would celebrate on tax day if we really prioritized where our money was going and it was like, okay, it's going to healthcare and it's going to college and education, it's going for infrastructure, it's going for job creation. If our tax money actually went to stuff that is rational, I would fucking love tax day. I'd have a giant smile on my face like, yeah, I'm paying my taxes. Yes. But now on tax day, you're like, here I go, funding the military-industrial complex and giving subsidies to big banks and Wall Street and ExxonMobil. So our government is broken, man. It's broken. And, this is a huge story. Go ahead. Go watch CNN. See if they cover this. Half of the fucking money raised on crowdfunding goes to medical bills. That's crazy. That is fucking crazy. People get sick and they go bankrupt in the U.S. People get sick, they need to launch a crowdfunding campaign, which, again, 9 out of 10 times doesn't even hit the goal. This is such bullshit. Medicare for all right now. That's the answer. Okay. Next. Let's check in on the resistance and see what they're doing. Congressman introduces COFEFE Act to make social media a presidential record. The Democrats might lose again in 2018. They seriously might lose again. They could lose in 2020. Trump can get a second term. He can get a second term. I know everybody thinks like it's just a layup election. But remember, in 2012, Republicans thought it was a layup election against Obama, and it wasn't. So there's a lot of false security right now in Democratic circles.
Yeah, Republicans and Trump are so bad that we're going to win in a giant wave. Anyway, I just introduced the COFEFE Act in order to preserve President Trump's tweets as a matter of historical record. You know what this is? This is like fake bravery. That's what this is. This is like, oh, I'm taking a bold stand. Let's save Trump's tweets.
Fuck. They're so goofy and they're so fucking stupid. But it's anything to avoid making the promises to the American people that they should. Because it's hard to do the work. It's hard to fight for Medicare for all and stand up against for-profit health insurance companies that have bought our government. It's hard to stand up and fight for Medicare for all for that reason. It's hard to fight against Big Pharma. It's hard to stand up to Wall Street and fight Wall Street and say, we're going to bring back Glass-Steagall and we're going to regulate your ass, because then your donors just got cut in half. You lost all your Wall Street donors. You lost all your Big Pharma donors. You lost all your private health insurance donors. It's hard to stand up if I'm going to fight for a living wage, because all your corporate support... Forget it. It's hard to say we're going to legalize marijuana. Let's fight to legalize marijuana. Let's fight for a new deal. Spend trillions of dollars on jobs for the people. It's hard to do all that. That's hard work. So what do? Try to find a way where you can pat yourself on the back and pretend like you're a hero without doing shit.
I introduced a Russia sanctions bill because Russia is bad and Russia owns Trump. He's Vladimir Putin's puppet. Aren't I so bold? Escalating tensions with another nuclear power? Isn't that, doesn't make me such a hero? Here's the COFEFE Act. Please, don't trip over yourselves when you run to the polls to vote for me. Please. All
right, let me give you what they say here. Democratic Representative Mike Quigley of Illinois has introduced a bill dubbed the COFEFE Act to require the preservation of a president's social media records. Quigley's bill turns the buzzword into an acronym standing for the Communications Over Various Feeds Electronically for Engagement Act, which would broaden the scope of the Presidential Records Act of 1978 by including the term social media as documentary material. On May 31st, President Donald Trump declared at 12:06 a.m. on Twitter, "Despite the constant negative press, COFEFE." The tweet remained published for several hours before being removed, allowing observers plenty of time to ponder the meaning of COFEFE. That it was obviously supposed to be coverage, despite the negative press coverage. Okay. But the deletion and others like it have raised questions about how president's social media should be handled and preserved. In order to maintain public trust in government, elected officials must answer for what they do and say. This includes 140-character tweets, Quigley, who co-founded the Congressional Transparency Caucus, said in a statement. In light of the president's use of Twitter as a daily means of communicating directly with the public, Quigley's bill reignites a long-running conversation about the extent of presidential record-keeping and transparency. If the president is going to take to social media to make sudden public policy proclamations, we must ensure that these statements are documented and preserved for future reference, the lawmaker said. Tweets are powerful, and the president must be held accountable for every post. You are a hero, sir. Oh, my God. You're so brave. So fucking brave. COFEFE Act. Oh, yes, COFEFE. The millennials will like me, right? Pokemon, go to the polls to vote for me, the COFEFE Act guy. Fuck you. Jesus Christ. You know, here's a might come as a surprise to this jackass. You do know that Twitter saves the tweets, right?
We're going to do a congressional act. Call it, "We agree with the stuff Twitter already does" act.
You could say, well, hold on, Kyle. He deletes some tweets. Yeah, but there's also services that save the deleted tweets. Nothing but a giant fucking waste of time. And they're trying to trick you. They have no ideas. They're not for the policies that you want. So they do shit like this, and they think it's going to work. It's not going to work. This is some bullshit. If you want people to go vote for you, you want to win in a giant wave, drop the fucking COFEFE fake progressive bullshit and stand up for the right things. Medicare for all, living wage, free college, and the wars. I'm not going to go through the entire list. You know the deal, but they're doing everything to try to avoid that. JusticeDemocrats.com, our candidates fight for those things, and we need you because they take no corporate money, no PAC money, so they're at a permanent financial disadvantage when it comes to the donors. So donate and help out. JusticeDemocrats.com/donate. We're trying to raise $500,000 for the candidates for their campaigns by the end of this month. And we need you. We need you now more than ever. But let's end this fucking garbage. I can't stand these corporate Democrats. They drive me crazy. So we have to get people in there who will fight for the right things. The Golden State Warriors have unanimously refused a White House visit after winning the NBA championship. Warriors coach Steve Kerr has ripped Trump as a blowhard and ill-suited for the office, and player David West said the president was a poor role model. Quote, "All the tactics that he used to get elected are the very things that someone like me, who works with youth on a consistent basis, are the things that we try to talk our young folks out of being," West said. "We try to talk our young people out of being bullies. We try to talk our young men out of disrespecting women. We try to talk our young people into being accepting of other people's opinions and other people's walks of life." He is the complete opposite of all that, West added. Curry has also criticized Trump, who was described as a great asset by the CEO of Under Armour, which the player endorses. Quote, "I agree with that description," Curry said, "if you remove the ET from the asset, from asset." So people on the team, not a fan of Trump, and they're like, "Yeah, we're not going to go." I think they even said we're not going to go before the official invite was out there, but I think the invite is like a standard thing that happens after whenever anybody wins any major sporting event. I think they usually end up going to the White House. So, you know, as a result of this, of course, you have Democrats like, heroes, heroes, and you have Republicans like, ah, oh, fucking anti-American traitor assholes, we didn't want you there anyway, fucking assholes. And so that got me thinking, what would I do if I was one of them? And, yeah, I don't think I'd go. I don't think I'd go. Not because I think I'm taking any sort of, like, brave moral stand, but because I don't want to go. I don't really want to meet the guy. And, yeah, he is kind of a loathsome guy. And me not going stems half from laziness and half from just saying, yeah, kind of fuck you. I don't like you. So, again, I don't think it's like a hero thing. I wouldn't pat myself on the back and go, oh, look at me, so brave by not going. No, it's just like half lazy, half just fuck off. I don't really like you, so go fuck yourself. So, yeah, I don't buy into the whole, like, but it's the integrity of the office. Like I'm supposed to worship the office. But there's good things and bad things that have come out of the office. Sure, Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, like, yay, that's good stuff. The New Deal, yeah, it's all lovely stuff, but then there's also fucking Japanese internment, and there's dropping two nuclear bombs in Japan and doing a Native American genocide and fucking slavery. So time not to, the office, the office, the office. Whatever. so, yeah, I kind of agree with them. Look, to me, the real heroic thing, the real moral stand, for Trump, it's almost an easy decision. Like, okay, he's obviously a bad guy. He wears it on his sleeve. I mean, do we really need to go through the list? Grab women by the pussy, quote, I don't even wait. You don't wait for what? You don't wait for consent. And then later on, they let you do whatever. How'd you know? You just said you don't even wait. What do you mean they let you do whatever? You just said, I don't even wait. So you didn't wait for consent. And then a lot of women came out and said, yeah, I didn't want him to do it, but he did it. There's that, but honestly, that's a side point to the stuff where he says, let's bring back torture. I love torture. Let's do it. It works. Doesn't work, and we shouldn't bring it back, and it's illegal under international law for good reason. And when he said, let's kill terrorist families on purpose. So let's do violence for political reason against innocent people. That's the definition of terrorism. He advocated on live TV on Fox and Friends for being a terrorist. In his first military act as president, he ended up killing an 8-year-old American girl and at least 30 civilians. He's just a bad dude, and I don't want to be around him. I don't give a fuck what other people think of that, if they're, oh, they're so brave or not. I don't give a fuck. I just don't want to be around him. But to me, the real morally courageous act would be if people denied seeing Obama. Because the thing with Obama is pop culture – and a lot of people on the left view him as, oh, a hero, amazing, first black president. You, come on, you got, I mean, who wouldn't want to go see him? Oh, he's cool, and him and Michelle hang out with Beyonce, and they're hip with the kids, and look at him dancing on Ellen, and what an open-minded, lovely, progressive president we have. But no, bitch. For example, his drone war killed 90% the wrong people. We're doing more interventions now. We did more interventions under Obama than we had under Bush. 7 different interventions were happening under Obama. He deported a record number of people. Record number of people. There's a lot of shit he did. You know, go ask Edward Snowden how progressive fucking Obama is. So there's a lot of shit he did where you can draw a moral line and say, no. No, I'm not going to go see that guy. That would be real bravery, because not only are you standing up against the fucked up shit he did, you're also saying to pop culture, like, what's wrong with all you guys falling in line and acting like he's the best president ever and he's never done anything wrong? That would take real moral courage. Trump, it's almost an easy decision. It's just so clear he's a bad guy and he wears it on his sleeve and does horrible things and pushes horrible policies that it's like, yeah, that one's easy. For Obama, it's a little harder, because half the stuff he does is pretty good. But then half the stuff is fucking deplorable and horrendous, and pop culture loves him. So that would have been the real, you know, strong stand to take. But either way, in this instance, I tend to agree with him. They're not necessarily heroic for doing it. This isn't really courageous. And I think they probably agree with me with that on that point, but, you know, it's still something I agree with. Okay, next. Jeez, we only got 5 minutes left. Shit. I have a red alert here for all of the free speech warriors on the right specifically. New poll finds 42% of Trump voters think it's appropriate to body slam reporters. Nearly half of Trump voters are okay with assaulting journalists. You know, they had it coming. You know, fake news, fake news. Obviously, if you write something I don't like, I get to do violence against you, which means, oh, shit, we're the snowflakes. That's what we are. We're snowflakes. We were triggered by the microaggression of a news story we don't like, so now we want our safe space, and in order to create it, we're going to assault you. There's nothing that pisses me off more than the right-wing social justice warriors, the social injustice warriors, because at least when it's the left-wing, authoritarian left college campus kids who are against free speech and free expression, at least there's a pile-on when they're against the First Amendment and free speech and free expression and a free press. At least there's a pile-on, and there's outrage rightly directed at them, where people go, what the fuck? Just because you don't like this person's opinion, you got to shut them down? You're fucking wrong. You're wrong. At least there's a pile on when they do it. When it's right-wingers, there's nobody fucking says anything. Nobody says anything. When Trump sues Bill Maher over a joke that he didn't like, the most snowflakiest of all snowflakes move I've ever seen, nobody says, ah, little bitch, social justice warrior, social injustice warrior, snowflake, triggered. Nobody says that. Nobody says that. Nobody says that when in red states all across the country, Republicans pass laws to silence protesters. Nobody says they're against free speech, Republican politicians against free speech, cracking down on free speech, cracking down on free speech, cracking down on free speech. Nobody says that. Nobody says it. Nobody says a goddamn word when 42% of Trump voters think it's appropriate to body slam reporters, which means assault reporters, which means offensive violence against somebody who didn't do anything to you. So when Greg Gianforte, the now congressman, did that to Ben Jacobs, the Guardian reporter, nearly half of Trump voters went, that's right. Assault people I disagree with. That's right. Assault people who say things that trigger me because you're fucking snowflakes. So, yes, we have a social justice warrior problem. We have a social injustice warrior problem. We have right-wing snowflakes and left-wing snowflakes, and it would be nice if people started talking about that the right way, as opposed to pretending like it's only on the left. They only want to silence speech and are against free expression and all that stuff on the left. It's only the left. It's only the left and the college kids who do it. That's not true. That's nowhere near true. In fact, when it comes to prominent figures and politicians, it's more so on the right. Okay. Pew Research is out with a new poll on what government programs people want to cut. Of course, the Republicans have taken a hatchet to the federal budget, so why not ask the American people what they think? So let's take a look at this here. The most important column that you're going to focus on there is on the far right. That's the percentage of people that want to decrease spending, cut spending for these various programs or in these various areas. Veterans benefits, only 3% of Americans want that cut. Education, only 9% want to cut education. Highways and bridges, only 7% want to cut it. Medicare, only 9% want to cut it. Healthcare, only 18% want to cut it. Scientific research, 12%. Defense, 20%. By the way, let me pause on that one for a second. If the American people knew how much we actually spend on the military and how much we spend compared to other nations and how much we spend as a percentage of the discretionary budget, they would change their opinion like that. Like that. There's no way that when people learn that they're going to say, yeah, don't cut it. They're going to say, fucking cut it. What are you doing? We spend more than the top 10 other nations combined on the military. Over 50% of our discretionary budget goes to the military. We just blow trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars on it like it's nothing for no reason. We have 800 military bases around the world. It costs $100 billion a year just to maintain those. So people knew they would change their opinion on that immediately. I'm totally convinced of that. All right, let's continue here. Environmental protection, only 19% want to cut that. Anti-terrorism in the U.S., only 11% want to cut it. Social Security, only 6%. Assistance to the needy, 21% want to cut that. Unemployed, 24%. Assistance to the needy in the world, so international aid, only 31% want to cut that. And the State Department and embassies, only 23% want to cut it. So in other words, people don't want to see any of this shit cut. And by the way, the Trump administration and the Republicans want to cut most of these things. So here's another example where the Republicans and President Trump are wildly out of step with what the American people want. So in a democracy, you should vote for what you want. The answer, let's face it, is Justice Democrats. The populist left, that's for virtually all the policies the American people want, a majority of them are in favor of where for. So go to justicedemocrats.com, sign your name and support, read our platform, donate if you can, because we need it, because we're up against behemoths with corporate money and name recognition and PAC money, so we need it. But this shows you right here the unpopularity of the Trump / Republican agenda. Okay. I got to keep going. I'm going to squeeze in one more here, and then we will call it a day. Pew Research decided to ask people why they left religion, and the results are interesting. So it says half of nuns, N-O-N-E-S, left childhood faith over lack of belief. One in five cite dislike of organized religion. So let me give you the more specific numbers here. We're mostly going to be focusing on the stuff on the left that's in bold. So the percentage of people who left simply because they said, look, I don't believe. Like, I don't believe, I don't think religion is true, I don't think it's correct, so I'm not religious. 49% say, yeah, I just don't believe. So that's their reasoning. Hey, why do you call yourself a nun, N-O-N-E, like as in not affiliated with a religion? They go, I just don't believe. I don't think it's true. 20% say, I actively dislike organized religion. So that's the second category there. It's behind of how many people said it. Then 18% said they're religiously unsure or undecided. So that's the people who go, oh, why am I not affiliated with any religion? I don't know. I'm just not sure if I believe, and I don't know. I just don't know. And then you have people who are inactive believers. So they're part of the nun category. That's 10%. They're part of the nun category, but they say, yeah, I just really don't go to services, and I don't know. I don't actively practice it, so I guess I'm not really religious. So there's your breakdown there. 49% say, I don't believe. I don't think it's true. 20% say, I actively dislike organized religion. 18% say I'm religiously unsure, I'm undecided, I don't know. And 10% are just inactive believers. This is also interesting. I'm going to give you the percentage real quick of non-believers who describe themselves as atheist, agnostic, and nothing in particular. 82% describe themselves as atheist. 63% also describe themselves as agnostic. And 37% say they're just nothing in particular. And let me just give you some examples real quick of why people say they're unaffiliated. I'll give you the direct quotes. For the people who said, look, I just don't believe, here's what they said. Learning about evolution when I went away to college. That's what made this person non-religious. Another person said, too many Christians doing unchristian-like things. Another said, religion is the opiate of the people. I believe stole that from Karl Marx. Another person said, rational thought makes religion go out the window. Another said, lack of any sort of scientific or specific evidence of a creator. I just realized somewhere along the line that I didn't really believe it.
I'm doing a lot more learning, studying, and kind of making decisions myself rather than listening to someone else. So those are examples of people who said, I just don't believe. And then for people who dislike organized religion, I'll give you just a few of these real quick. One person said, I see organized religious groups as more divisive than uniting. Another person said, the clergy sex abuse scandal. That's why they dislike organized religion. And then another person said, the church's teachings on homosexuality. So interesting stuff. It's a growing population for sure in the U.S. and probably the West more generally speaking. And I think that's largely a good thing. So there you have it, the beliefs of non-believers and why they came to that conclusion. All right, guys, out of time, baby, out of time. No live show tomorrow. But we are back on Monday. Everybody, enjoy your weekend. Much love. Mwah. Peace.